Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XXVIII, Galba. The Julio-Claudian dynasty has fallen, and into the power vacuum steps four contenders to be the next emperor. They will all have their turn at power in the year 69 CE, and the first is an aging governor from Spain named Galba. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Galba is from a very aristocratic family. He's a Roman who is born about 3 BCE, and therefore, by the time we get to the death of Nero in 68, he's already quite an old man. But in between, he has had the regular career of a Roman aristocrat, particularly the military career. His full name's Servius Sulpicius Galba, and the Galbas are a pretty renowned family. They go back a long way, and Galba's father was a consul, although their fortunes have kind of gone up and down. They haven't always risen to the highest office. He is born quite near Rome, so he's kind of at the centre of power right from the beginning. And he sort of crops up all the way along the Julio-Claudians that we've talked about in the past. So being born in 3 BCE, he's born sort of halfway through Augustus's reign. You might think, well, he's out of the running to have any kind of influence under Augustus, which is true. But we're told that Livia was quite close to him. Remember, Livia died in 29 CE, so Galba would have been in his 20s. That comes up in Suetonius, and it's almost a suggestion, although it'd be very strange because Livia was quite old by that point, of a sort of flirtation or a romance, maybe. It's not quite clear from Suetonius, but there's some kind of closeness between him and Livia, and he was actually left money in Livia's will, although, as you might remember, Tiberius came along and annulled what was in the will, so he never got that bequest.
So at this point in his life, I'd say that he would have had the kind of youth where he would have been raised to go into politics as well, to go into the family trade almost, was he?
He was. He got the regular education of a Roman aristocrat, and he's said to have been a fair orator, but not a brilliant one. And really where he makes his mark is through the military. So he becomes a Roman general. He does very well because not only does he come from this very aristocratic family, but his father, after Galba's mother dies, he remarries a woman called Livia Ocalina, and she's got money. And allegedly she was attracted to Galba's dad because of the aristocratic pedigree. And he, of course, gets a lot out of it because he suddenly becomes immensely wealthy as opposed to just wealthy. So it's kind of a great match and a good background for Galba because that means he's got both the prestige and the money to make it at Rome.
So was he adopted by his new stepmother then?
She did adopt him, and that means he takes on her name, but he keeps the name Galba at the end of it. It means he's going to get all of her money, which is great for him. So he looks like a very successful Roman aristocrat at this point, and indeed he does make this very renowned military career for himself. He does well in the provinces, you know, he's a man for Rome during the period of the early emperors. And he's sort of known for being a very, very tough general. And you can tell this is something that the sources admire about him at this point. But he's sort of almost excessively tough, even for Roman tastes. So, you know, if there's any kind of fault within his army, he will have no problem with doing what the Romans call decimation.
Sounds a bit extreme.
He is said to have done this on at least one occasion where the army was not performing as well as he wanted them to.
Wait,
and it means you kill,
each 10?
Tenth man. Yes.
Oh, there we go.
Well, it's not mythical. It did happen amongst Roman armies, but it's seen as a very extreme move.
Yeah.
Because obviously you lose a tenth of your men, but you really show the nine who are left who's in control. So you kind of terrify them into submission. But there's a kind of grudging admiration for Galba amongst our ancient sources because he's this tough Roman soldier, kind of the old brigade.
Yeah.
And that, in a way, will lead to his lack of success when he becomes emperor, the fact that he's this tough old guy.
Yeah.
And he won't actually bend at all. So that's kind of his background and his character, and that is fairly consistent within the sources that he's this very tough disciplinarian.
That's a bit of foreshadowing, but what happens to him in the meantime? Does he crop up at all during the reign of Caligula and Claudius?
He's like one of these fictional characters that you put into a historical film. Obviously, he's not fictional.
He's like a background player. You're waiting for the Galba cameo in this.
Possibly he could have come to the fore much earlier, because he's supposed to have been sort of pushed forward by some of his followers when Caligula was killed. There's a power vacuum there, as we know. There's nobody really obvious, and Claudius is kind of the man least likely who does become emperor after Caligula. And it is said that he was encouraged to go for supreme power at that point, and he didn't.
He was too much of a loyalist.
Yeah, he observed the proper process, such as it was in the imperial period, and it was, I guess, somebody from the Julio-Claudian family with which he had no links should be the next emperor. And Claudius is supposed to have been very grateful to him and to have kind of given him honours and appreciated the fact that he didn't just push his way in at that point.
I remember as well from the Agrippina podcast that Galba, he made a cameo in that as well, didn't he?
Indeed, because Agrippina is supposed to have had a crush on him and sort of thrown herself at him and then been told off by Galba's mother-in-law for making a spectacle of herself. But Galba, it does seem likely that he was devoted to his wife, because after she died and they didn't have any surviving children, he didn't remarry, which would have been the normal thing to do to ensure an heir. And this kind of comes up later as well, because he thinks that one of the reasons he's unpopular when he becomes unpopular is that he doesn't have an heir. So he tries to do something about that by adoption later. But at that time, he doesn't have another wife. He doesn't have any children after his first wife dies.
What changed to encourage him to make a move towards becoming the emperor?
Well, there's an implication that his character changed a bit during Nero's reign, in that from being this very tough disciplinarian, he sort of became a little bit lax. Now, we don't know. This might be the sources actually commenting on Nero, the fact that Nero doesn't seem to be a very military emperor. And of course, he's interested in the dramatic arts and Greek stuff and seen as a bit of a soft emperor. But this is supposed to be reflected through Galba, in that he himself becomes a little more lax and he doesn't rule his province in Spain with the iron hand that we might expect, at least for that time.
He is getting on.
He's in his 60s by this point. But I think what actually kind of inspires him to have an ambition for the emperorship is the mess that comes about towards the end of Nero's reign and the kind of slide into civil war. So Nero's attempt at suicide is brought about by the kind of conspiracy and revolt in Gaul under Vindex. And it's sort of this same revolt that brings Galba to the fore.
How much support did Galba have?
Well, he certainly had the support of his own soldiers, because they proclaim him emperor even before Nero's dead. So there's already this idea that there's a kind of breakdown in power, and the revolt of Vindex makes that clear, that Nero's end is nigh. So Galba's kind of one of the people who walks into this power vacuum. So if you wanted to be kind to Galba, you could actually see this as still being the man who's for Rome. There are no Julio-Claudians left. And that's actually how Suetonius starts the life of Galba. He says the Julio-Claudians had now come to an end. There were no more Julians. He says it very starkly. You need somebody to take over. You need somebody to be in control. And Galba is one of the people who walks into that space. But as we're going to see, he's not the only one, and this is going to lead to it being a very short-lived reign. In fact, there are three others who are going to be vying for power in various parts of the empire. We've also got Otho and Vitellius and Vespasian, a kind of different corners of the empire. And they're all going to be emperor for a short time, Vespasian for a bit longer. And we call this year, the year 69 CE, the year of the four emperors, which is in fact the name of a book about this year of civil war. It's also called in some editions the long year 69.
The long year.
Yeah.
Should also be a HBO series.
It should, yeah. Let's pitch it.
So once Nero dies, Galba is at the head of his army, marching into Rome. Is the might of the army how he intends to take power?
Well, it's what gives him authority, immediate authority. And that's something that's changing now, is that the Senate is sort of becoming irrelevant. And you need the support of an army to become emperor. And that's what's going to be the case for the next four emperors. And he also, at least initially, has the support of the Praetorian Guard and the Praetorian Prefect Nymphidius Sabinus. Although it's a very confusing time, and Nymphidius himself kind of makes a break for power, but he's not popular and is murdered. So, you know, it's a very dangerous time. You've got this sort of fast turnover of people aiming for power, and Galba is the one, at least initially, who makes it. One of the things that each of the commanders does is to promise things to people. Galba promises things to everybody, but perhaps the most important thing he promises is bonuses to the army. And this happens so often that you'd think he'd learn his lesson. He then refuses to give those bonuses, and that's going to lead to his death because he needs to keep the support of the army. And these are armed soldiers, so they can get rid of him at any point. So it's a particularly stupid thing to do, not to come forward with this. But it's kind of almost the resurgence of Galba's tough disciplinarian character, because he's supposed to have said that he doesn't buy his troops, he chooses them. In other words, the army should be based on the people who are capable, not mercenaries, basically, who can be bought off. But it's not a very pragmatic line. It's very ethical, but it's not the right tone to take at that particular point.
It may be ethical, but it also sounds very double standard, because he's very happy to promise it in order to become emperor, but not happy enough to follow through. So the ethics are there when it suits him.
Exactly.
So now that he is emperor, are people accepting of him? Because he's the first non-Julio-Claudian to become emperor. That must be an adjustment for the people. It must be an adjustment for the Senate. And, well, we know there's rivals out there who don't take kindly to him declaring himself emperor or him being made emperor. So how much of a bumpy transition is it?
Well, Galba was not popular from the start. Nobody really accepts him at any level. And it's Suetonius who tells us that he manages to offend every single stratum of society almost immediately. We talked about the army and how not coming through with the money is a problem. He certainly doesn't put on games or anything for the people. That would be out of character anyway. He doesn't offer them other kinds of incentives like corn or money. So he's not popular with the people. He's not popular with the Senate, because almost immediately he starts executing the ones that he decides on in his camp. And that's never a popular move with the Senate, obviously. So he alienates everybody. And it's almost inevitable that he's not going to last very long. Although at such a tumultuous time, none of the emperors initially lasts very long. And Galba gets 7 months, which is more than some people do.
That's actually a fair bit for emperor for 1 year. He's also quite brutal with the taxes that he levies out, isn't it? That's the one reference I could find to his time as being emperor, is that he was pretty mean with the taxes against those who didn't accept him as emperor.
Yes, he kind of seems to hold grudges in a way that's, again, not very pragmatic at this particular point. You want to wait until your power has really been backed up and you're kind of comfortably installed before you start taking it out on people. So he's executing senators. He's telling provinces that they're going to have to pay more because they haven't immediately backed him. It would have been difficult at this point, but he really needed to accustomed people to seeing him in power before he started taking the hard line. But that seems to be part and parcel of Galba's character, that he believes the hard line is what people should just accept.
I found one other reference to him as well, which said that distant provinces, in a manner of acting out, toppled the statues of him. And I actually thought to myself, oh, at least he was quick enough to get the statues up.
But we don't have any. I think the only portraits we have of Galba are from coins. There are always coins. You can't get rid of all of them. And he doesn't really look like a very attractive guy from these coins. You know, he doesn't seem to have encouraged those who were putting out coinage for him to make him look more attractive, which you could do. People like Augustus, as we know, always looked 30, even though he lived into his 70s. So this kind of cult of youth is also something that Galba seems to have rejected. But yes, you can get statues put up very, very quickly, and they were there, but we don't have a single one left. So they really did get rid of them all.
Mm. Are there any direct examples of his time as emperor as to why he was unpopular?
There are many, many given by Suetonius and Plutarch. But my favourite, and it's a very gruesome one, is that he really believed in the punishment fitting the crime and it being a very extreme punishment. So one of the things he did was to crucify Roman citizens, which is a no-no. And another thing he did, which is extremely gruesome, is that somebody who was accused of fraud and convicted of fraud, he had their hands cut off and then nailed to their workbench, so their place of business, as a kind of reminder. And they couldn't carry out this fraud anymore. They couldn't cook the books anymore without hands. But also, it's a very literal way of taking punishment. You prevent that person from doing this again, and you also leave it there as a reminder.
And a warning to his workmates.
Yeah, a warning to everybody. That kind of act is something that's going to mark Galba out as a tyrant from the beginning. And he kind of ticks all the boxes of tyranny that we've seen with the Julio-Claudians. So he's secretive, he's cruel, at times he's decadent, which doesn't seem to fit with the rest of his character. He's mean. There isn't a single form of unpopularity that he doesn't seem to embrace. It's almost as if he dares the Roman people to keep him as emperor despite all of this, and he doesn't win.
I've just got the mental image of coming into work and seeing my co-worker's hands there on his workbench and just going, you know, what happened to Joe? So there's a lot of discontent at the empire at this time. Galba was not long for the emperor, so what happened to bring about his downfall?
Well, Galba's sort of unpopular with those around him because he seems to have favourites and takes advice from them. One of them's a freedman. So this was the problem people had with Claudius and Nero to a certain extent, that you shouldn't be taking advice from inferiors. But in particular, Galba managed to really annoy somebody who was quite powerful and was close to him, and that is Otho, who's going to be the next short-lived emperor. And Otho is much, much younger and expected to be named as his heir. He's also a general in Spain. But I think he was sort of led along with this, you know. Galba sort of acts quickly because, as I mentioned, he thinks one of the reasons he's not popular is that he doesn't have an heir. He's kind of trying to put things right that are a much bigger problem than that, because he's unpopular for lots of really good reasons, and it's not just the fact that he doesn't have an heir. So he kind of looks around and decides he's going to name a man called Piso as his heir. And this really, really irritates Otho, to the extent that Otho then mounts a rebellion against him.
So Otho presumably has the support of his own military faction and is mounting his own offensive. So Galba takes his own men and goes out to confront that?
Yes, which is a mistake because it's an ambush and that's how he gets killed. Apparently everybody abandons him. It's rather sad.
So all his own soldiers.
His own entourage and his military guard, except for one person, which is almost worse. The only reason we know this soldier's name, Sempronius Densus, who does try to defend him. And actually the accounts are different as to whether Densus is the one who stands up and sort of stands in the way of Galba or attacks them even after they've killed Galba. Either way, poor old Densus gets killed in the melee, and Galba, his body is dismembered after he's been killed. It's a really gruesome description.
They cut off his head and take that to Otho, don't they?
Yes.
As a bit of a, here's the proof that we've done the deed.
Yes. Galba's almost like this intertextual bad emperor because, of course, that's what happened to Pompey a whole century earlier, Caesar's enemy, and the head is taken to Julius Caesar. And Caesar really wasn't very happy with it. So I don't know if they're trying to reenact this death of Pompey, that the head of Galba is taken to the rival Otho. But then the head gets really nasty mistreatment after this. It's then sold off to a freedman who kind of kicks it around at a grave. This nasty mistreatment of the body that it sounds bad enough to us, but in antiquity, it's sort of even worse, where you're meant to show respect for the dead, especially if they're the great dead, like an emperor. And his body really isn't given this rest. It's given all kinds of humiliating mistreatment.
The freedman that his head was sold to,
Yes.
His former master had been put to death by Galba.
Okay, so there's a direct revenge going on.
There is. So it was a revenge thing. It wasn't just, I'm in need of a soccer ball. There was a revenge element to the head being bought by the freedman.
Mm. So there's a kind of personal vindication, personal taking of vengeance against the body of Galba. And he's really being treated like a criminal, okay? His body being torn apart. And the rest of the body is supposed to have been thrown into the Tiber, which is what you do with criminals. God knows what the water of the Tiber was like. And Galba really gets a very ignominious end.
That's really brutal for somebody who was emperor. I can't help but feel that if he was a Julio-Claudian, no matter how badly the Julio-Claudians were, their bodies were never desecrated.
No, they weren't. I mean, the worst that you could do to a Julio-Claudian was to not put them into the mausoleum of Augustus.
Yeah.
That's the marker that they haven't made the grade, as it were. And I think that is the difference, that this is a time of turmoil and civil war, and there's a kind of mob rule feeling going on. And certainly that's the way Tacitus talks about it, as a time of great uncertainty in Italy. So that's the end of Galba. Don't irritate the people close to you who you've led on. It's the lesson we should learn there.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can find it on iTunes, where you can subscribe, tell your friends about it, and please leave us a review there. You can come and join our growing number of fans on our Emperors of Rome Facebook page, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In our next episode of Emperors of Rome, the Civil War of 69 CE continues, as Emperor Otho comes to power. Until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.